The Pat Kenny Show
with Mater Private Network
on News Talk.
You can call it Volkswagen, you can call it Volkswagen, you can call it VW, but one way or the other, it's Europe's biggest car maker. Last year it sold 8.6 million units. Now, the company has come a long way from its Nazi roots, but it operates in a rapidly changing industry, and it's investing tens of billions to try to keep up with upstart rivals like Tesla. News Talk's Deputy Business Editor Gavin McLaughlin is here for more on his series, The Business Of, the business today being the business of Volkswagen. Gavin, good morning.
Morning, Pat.
So give us a bit of history first.
Well, the Nazis' idea was to create a people's car, and that's what Volkswagen means. It's a mass-produced, affordable car. That was the plan. The design for it was done by Ferdinand Porsche, and it essentially was what we would call a Volkswagen Beetle today. That was kind of the prototype. So it was being worked on through the 1930s, but when the war breaks out, they hadn't reached the stage of mass production. So instead, once the war breaks out, they switch to armaments, and the factory is in Wolfsburg in central Germany. So at the end of the war, the factory is in the British military zone, the part of Germany being controlled by Britain, and so the British take it over. The question then is, what do they do with it? Because they could easily have blown it up. It had been used to make military equipment. But what they did was that they brought in a guy called Major Ivan Hurst. He was 28 years old, and he was put in charge. And ultimately, the decision is made to keep it open. In a 1999 interview, Hurst explained the logic.
One Colonel McEvoy, Michael McEvoy, at Rhine Army, the British Army headquarters, who was in charge of operations like the one going on at Volkswagen, he went up to Berlin to the motor show at the beginning of 1939, where the Beetle, the Käfer, was first shown to the world. They were prototypes. And he had a ride in one of these, and he remembered the vehicle well. And because one of his detachments was already at Wolfsburg, he went to have a look at the factory, and he thought there was a possibility. When he realised that Volkswagen was working for the British already and was in the British zone, it was he who had the bright idea that if we could get the Volkswagen into production, it would provide the transportation which the British urgently needed for administering Germany, the British zone. The British Army had very few light vehicles. The only vehicles we had were 1,500 weight or one-ton trucks. A few light vehicles, but they'd come all the way up from Normandy and they were about worn out. And defence spending had been cut, so there was no hope of getting any help from Britain. If these cars could be made in Germany, they would be charged to occupation costs. That is, they will be paid for by Germany.
That is Major Ivan Hurst, who was put in charge of the Volkswagen factory by the British after the war. Interesting, the reason was just so we can have transport. We've nothing but beaten up post-war trucks. Yeah. So let's make cars. So what happened next, Gavin?
Well, he found a Beetle in the factory, Ivan Hurst did, and he sent it up to Army HQ for them to have a look at. And they came back and said, build us another 20,000 of these things. So that's what got the factory back up and running in a serious way. But it's very interesting because a few years later, you know, kind of 47, 48, things have moved on a bit, and the British military is trying to get rid of Volkswagen now. Famously, it was offered to a number of car companies, including Ford, who didn't want it. Basically, they didn't like the engineering. And ultimately, in 1949, it's handed back to the new German authorities, and then later it's privatised in 1960.
Now, the reason I put on my engineering hat for a moment here, the reason Ford didn't like it is the engine was in the back, number one, and number two, it was air-cooled, not water-cooled. And all the conventional cars of the time were water-cooled with a radiator and all the rest of it. The VW engine in the back of the car, you had an empty kind of trunk in the front, an empty bonnet. So Ford didn't like that, obviously.
It was very different to what their consumers were used to. And the other thing about it was, I mean, it's easy to kind of laugh at Ford for turning this down, but obviously there was still stigma around it because of its Nazi roots as well. So I'm sure that was a factor in their decision as well.
But But now, moving on, Volkswagen outstrips Ford and almost every other car company in the world.
Yeah, so Ford, for example, last year was number 8 in terms of vehicles sold, 3.9 million. Volkswagen was number 2 with 8.6. And number 1 is Toyota with 10.4. And we should remind people, I suppose, the Volkswagen Group, it's not just the Volkswagen brand. They also own Audi, they own Seat, they own Skoda and various others, including Porsche. Now, I would like to take this opportunity, Pat, to clear up another pronunciation question. We've done it on this segment before with Lidl, not Lidl. We've done it with Nike, not Nike. And now we're doing it with Porsche, which is not pronounced Porsche. And you don't have to take my word for it. Porsche even has their own pronunciation guide, which really hammers home the point, to be fair.
Porsche. 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 Porsche.
Porsche. Okay, I got it. Now, even if Volkswagen and Toyota are the two top car makers by vehicle sales, they are not the stock market darlings of the industry. There is somebody else.
Yeah, and that's Tesla. So it's based on its share price, Tesla is almost 10 times more valuable than Volkswagen, despite the fact that in 2021, it sold almost 10 times fewer cars. So that is really quite something. Now, one of the reasons for this, of course, is Tesla makes electric cars and they're seen to be the thing of the future. So if you look at it on that basis, Tesla sold 936,000 electric cars last year. Volkswagen Group sold 236,000 if you exclude plug-in hybrids. And just to, it's a bit of a digression, but I think they should be excluded, really, these things. The way they work is they are electric, but they have a backup sort of petrol system that kicks in if you run out of battery. And there's a concern that people might end up relying on that quite a bit, which obviously negates some of the carbon benefits.
Yeah, but the thing is, we have a PHEV, and I have an electric car myself, but my wife drives a PHEV, and she rarely puts petrol in it at all.
So
she's got 60k, it's an MG, she's 60k every day, and she never goes through the 60k unless she's got to make a trip down the country. So no petrol, just electricity.
So that's obviously a positive example of how it can work, but there is some environmentalists are a bit sniffy about them because of this reason that they think people might end up relying on the petrol part of it. So there is a big gap between Volkswagen and Tesla when it comes to electric cars. But Volkswagen has a few times said they think they can overtake Tesla on electric vehicles. And they're spending a fortune on this plan, 89 billion euros. Now, the man behind it is Herbert Diess, the Volkswagen chief executive, who has a bit of a mischievous streak. Last year in an interview with CNBC, he essentially called Tesla a startup. Bit cheeky.
Can the gap between what Tesla is doing and what you and other European automobile manufacturers are doing, can that gap be bridged?
I think so, because, you know, the race is open. This is not an industry which you can conquer within a few years or so. This is not a tech, so you need life cycles, you need product, you need plant capacities, you need market, you need to earn the trust of the customer. So this is a long run. And yes, there are a few startups which we are watching closely, and Tesla for sure is in the lead in some aspects there. But we are not so far behind and we are gaining momentum.
As Volkswagen chief executive Herbert Diess there saying he thinks he can prevail over Elon Musk in the long run. And he was reiterating this, Pat, only this week, telling employees he thinks they can overtake Tesla by 2025, essentially because he thinks they're better placed in terms of increasing production.
Now, the move to electric cars is not the only challenge, though, facing the industry, is it?
No, there's the question of autonomous driving. I think there's no doubt that will be a bigger feature of the market. Herbert Diess himself has said that, so that'll require a lot of investment. In the short term, they have to overcome these issues with getting parts, the semiconductor chips. The whole industry is having this issue. As of now, Volkswagen thinks things will start to get a bit easier later on this year. Another is whether people will be using cars less in the future than they are now. I mean, we have seen this trend in Western countries where people are getting their license later and they're driving less. And then just one more point on the carbon question. Even if all cars were electric, it's still better from a carbon point of view to have more public transport, because merely producing the electric cars emits carbon. So if you have less cars produced, you have less carbon. So that's another reason why they might find things more difficult in future. The car just isn't as good as public transport for reducing the carbon emissions.
Yeah, I mean, we currently have a taxi shortage. We reported on the programme the other day on that. But the kids today, even if they've access to a car, don't want to bring a car in because they want to have a few drinks. And public transport will, in the medium term, have to be the answer to their prayers if they want to get home late. We've got to have 24-hour trams and buses and trains. We just got to have it if we're going to solve all this. Anyway, as they face into all these challenges, they have made a big shift in their financial strategy as well. What have they done?
Well, remember we were saying at the start how it was set up to be the people's car, affordable to the masses. Not quite the strategy now, as Sunday Independent motoring editor Geraldine Herbert explains.
So suddenly there was a scramble for these chips. So then when they had very few of these semiconductor chips, they decided to put them in, obviously, to the cars that would make the most profit. So they discovered very quickly that you could sell less cars and make more profit. And I think this is really where the guiding principle that's coming into focus now is that's why they've shifted this emphasis now to growth rather or to profit rather than growth, that they realise that's just the way the market is going. So they're basically prioritising, I suppose, the expensive models and the high-end markets. So, I mean, this is really where their whole strategy is at the moment. And as I said, it's a big turnaround from a car company that used to just be all about, you know, being the world leader in terms of volume.
That's Sunday Independent motoring editor Geraldine Herbert there on Volkswagen's new strategy. And one final thing Geraldine told me, Pat, is they're very reliant on China, where the economy is quite sluggish. So that could be a problem as well.
Unlike other car makers, they were kind of the first foreign manufacturer to move into China, and they actually depend for at least half of their profits on China. But Chinese sales are falling at the moment, and premium marks like Porsche and Audi are doing really well, but their core Volkswagen models are not doing well. So a big challenge for them in the future is actually boosting their Chinese business. You know, I mean, if you scratch below the surface, VW are nearly more Chinese than they are German at this stage, and I'm not sure many people really realise that.
That's very interesting stuff, Gavin. When you talk about them trying to get more money, make more profit per car rather than increase the volume of cars. Henry Ford famously said, small cars mean small profits. Big cars mean big profits. And the whole idea was you sell something that looks huge, but basically the mechanics are the same as a smaller car. You're selling a lot of fresh air for a lot more money.
Yeah, well, yeah. Henry Ford was a clever man.
And the other thing that's interesting in terms of what you said about moving up the value chain, that's exactly, I think you were talking about this yourself, what the booze companies are doing. If fewer people or the same people are drinking less alcohol, you make them pay more for premium
exactly,
brands.
Exactly, yeah. Even if there's a smaller dollar spend overall in the market, you can still make more profits if you increase your margins on what you're selling. So that seemingly is what these guys are at.
Okay, this one may be for you. You maybe can solve this one from Don. In your motoring pronunciation slot, you could discuss the proper way to pronounce the word kilometre or kilometre.
I would have said kilometre, but it's probably depends on which side of the Atlantic you're on, doesn't it? It's one of those like lieutenant or lieutenant.
Yeah, I say kilometre, but some say tomato and some say tomato.
Yeah, or the other one is Caribbean or Caribbean. That's one I think about from time to time. Mm-hmm. Usually, I'd say on this side of the Atlantic, you'd go with the more British pronunciation. I would say kilometre as well.
All right, there we go. Thank you very much, Gavin McLaughlin, Newstalk's Deputy Business Editor.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Matter Private Network.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News.